Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. John Wright on behalf of the Connecticut Attorney General and the Connecticut Office of Consumer Counsel. We are here today, in a brief thumbnail sketch for the background, for the sequel to the Connecticut Party's challenge to ISO New England's 2009 executive compensation, completed last year. When ISO filed its 2009 budget, the Connecticut Party's intervened in that matter and challenged the budget as unsupported by substantial evidence. ISO responded by filing a 220-page answer. Included in that answer was a consultant report called the Mercer Report, which purported and provided a detailed analysis of ISO's executive compensation. There were a number of other documents that were filed in that answer as well. The 2009 FERC approved the budget over our objection. We appealed to this court. This court denied the petition for review, finding that the 2009 FERC process afforded us, one, an opportunity to be heard, and two, that it provided a sufficient detailed explanation because the FERC itself had reviewed the data and come to a conclusion that was reasonable. When ISO filed its 2010 budget the next year, the Connecticut parties again intervened and protested that it was not supported by substantial evidence. 2010, unlike in 2009, ISO failed to provide any answer or supplemental response. They did provide an answer, but it was 17 pages, and it was mostly just a recitation of the evidence that they had presented in their initial filing. There was none of the data that had been used to support the 2009 budget filing that the FERC itself had found to be necessary for its decision. In 2010, the FERC approved this budget over our objection again. We think this is a very simple case. There are two questions before the court today. The first is, have we been offered a meaningful opportunity to respond to the ISO's evidence presented in the 2010 budget process? And second, is FERC's 2010 budget process application decision supported by substantial evidence in the record? And we think the answer is no, for three reasons I'd like to outline in order. First, as the FERC itself realized in 2009, it acknowledged that the data provided in the Mercer report and the answer was essential to the decision-making process. Second, this court, in reviewing the FERC's 2009 budget application, accepted the FERC's reasoning based upon their providing us with a meaningful opportunity to be heard, to respond to the ISO's answer and the evidence therein. And they further found that after reviewing that evidence, that while they may have come to a different conclusion or could have come to a different conclusion, the FERC's decision did not jump the rails of reasonableness, and they were accorded the deference under the arbitrary and capricious standard.
Could I just be clear? The agency is arguing that since the 2009 was the base for everything that was going to happen in 2010, the focus of the proceeding was simply on the percentage increases. And what of that evidence was unavailable to you?
I'm not sure I understand. That the agency is saying the percentage increases for the 2.5 and 3.5 percentage increase. Okay. It is my understanding that has nothing to do with executive compensation only. That has to do with the remainder of the employees that were part of that. That was how the evidence was, I think, presented. If it also applied to the executive compensation as well, I think we still have to have a benchmark for what's an appropriate 2010 executive compensation, and it's not appropriate to go right back to 2009. As
what I wanted to be clear is whether or not taking 2009 as the base, and the question was what increases for 2010, was all of the evidence that related to that increase issue a part of the record that you had access to?
We did not contest the 2.5% to the 3.5% increase. That applied, as I understand it, to all the employees in the ISO. What we were looking for is an examination of executive compensation that would have been, we think that underlying circumstances can change. As you recall, this was a period of dramatic Judge Stowe?
So what would have changed? I see your point now. What would have changed from so the commission says the 09 compensation plan was just and reasonable, and your point is you have to make a new just and reasonable determination for 010, right? So what would have changed between 09 and 2010 that would have prevented the commission from simply relying on it?
Well, as the commission itself put forward, that when you are looking at a reasonable determination, first of all, as the commission accepts in its brief, all rate making is prospective. We don't set rates.
But what changed? What I mean, if nothing changed, then how could it be arbitrary and capricious for the commission to say, if it was just and reasonable last year, it's just and reasonable this year?
We don't know what changed because we don't have the access to the Mercer report, which was supposed to detail what the changes were going to be between 2009 and 2010.
Yeah, the commission had other reasons for it. Wasn't just that. The commission said, look, this new plan has been completely vetted through the process. There's that nationwide compensation study, and this compensation plan was either, you know, sort of at the average or below for nationwide comparisons.
Yes.
So they didn't rely just on that proposition.
Now, I'd like to address that in two ways. First of all, in 2009, the FERC itself acknowledged that when the ISO went back to review its executive compensation for the very next year, that the ISO would necessarily be using a new model based upon the economic circumstances that changed between ISO's early 2008 evaluation of executive compensation and reasonableness and ISO's 2009. It specifically provided that the Mercer report would look at the new benchmarks. Presumably, if you're going to have new benchmarks embedded into your analysis, then that is a change circumstances. And this court specifically approved ISO's FERC's approval of the 2009 budget by finding that there was this new opportunity to take a look at those compensation levels dependent upon the new circumstances at that time. We don't set rates. I mean, for example, cost of capital is something that changes every year, every couple of years.
Can I interrupt and ask one question, which is, your complaint seems to be that you wanted the Mercer report.
Yes.
Okay. As I read what was submitted to FERC by ISO, they didn't submit the Mercer report to FERC. In fact, they didn't even have the Mercer report yet, because if you look at the Dickstein affidavit, it just says that there will be consultation with Mercer down the road. And so when FERC approves this, it's not based on the Mercer report as a matter of substance. It's just based on, along with a number of other things, that there's an overall reasonable process going on here, namely independent board of directors, stakeholder involvement, checking with an outside consultant. So there's a process, so that looks good. So FERC says or suggests, and there's also the survey data, which shows that the increases are at the low end, so kind of getting to the substance. But I don't see the Mercer report being even available to the ISO at the time they submitted their – am I missing something there?
Respectfully, yes.
Okay.
The answer is that the Mercer report is done each year. In the 2009 case, they were relying upon the Mercer report that was evaluating ISO's that was conducted in 2008 and was evaluating ISO's 2007 budget. So what they would have been relying upon this time was the newer Mercer report, which would have still been conducted in 2009. And would have been reviewing ISO's 2008 executive compensation. We understand that there's a one-year lag behind each successive iteration of the Mercer report. But here's the problem that we're looking at for the ISO, and I'd also like to address your other question first, and that is that there were other elements that the FERC had relied upon in addition to the Mercer report, and I'm going to put that out as that's a red herring. There was no other evidence in the record that supported the executive compensation other than the Mercer report.
What about the national survey?
The national surveys, again, first of all, were evaluating not the base loads or the incentive compensation or the entire executive compensation. Those were purporting to analyze what a reasonable iterative increase, per year increase, there should be for the ISO. And again, that was not the issue we were challenging. We were challenging executive compensation, not the compensation increases as they went all along. And I'd also like to point out that those records as well were not provided into the record. They were not made a part of the record. They were just referred to in Ms. Dickstein's affidavit. So again, that was not provided to the people. I would like to point out that if you want to look at all the other items that were made a part of the answer, first of all, none of those other items that were a part of the answer were actually made a part of the record in the second time. So regardless of whether the FERC had relied upon other items independent of the Mercer report, they still weren't made a part of the record for the 2010 budget. But more importantly, I think there's some kind of an argument that there were items independent of the Mercer report that the FERC could have relied upon in the 2010. And those other items that were a part of the answer simply were not related to executive compensation. They had an affidavit from Mr. Ludlow that regarded depreciation studies, which we had also challenged, employee counts. There was an IRS filing that disclosed what the actual levels of executive compensation were, but were actually redundant to the Mercer report. It's our position that was nothing else in that answer that would have been supportive of any executive compensation level.
Do you want to say the rest of your time? Or did you have another point?
I did want to make one more point, and then I'll save the rest of my time. I wanted to just outline briefly the problem that we have with the infinite regress of FERC's relying each year upon executive compensation levels that were determined from the previous year. In 2010, they're saying we're having a baseline of 2009, and that's why it's going to be presumptively reasonable, and we're going to go forward from there. How do we know that 2009 was reasonable? It's because we went back and looked at the 2008 executive compensation, which was, in fact, only reviewing the 2007 executive compensation. And we have a serial regression of arguments in support that is never actually determined in the first instance. And there was a
Supreme... I thought the agency said that the figures had to be updated. You know, while it's a projection, then they find out what the actual compensation was. And the first order said the agency was to update the information, or ISO was to update.
Yes, they will update it, and after the decision has been made, after the rates have been embedded, the costs have been embedded in rates, and after it's too late for anybody to appeal those rates.
I mean, in terms of the next year, you're talking about 1 year lag, and there's never any actual figure that it's based on.
Oh, it's not the figure, it's the justification. Mm-hmm. It's the rationale for why that is done. Justice Scalia.
My hypothetical would be that the base in year one is 100. They propose a base of 200 in the second year. But with the update, they know that, in fact, it ought to be at 205 instead of 200. So when they come up the third year, they look at that 205, not the 200. Isn't that what happens?
They don't actually look at the 205, although, as the FERC's 2010 decision makes clear, they will actually file those results in that case, so you'll have the actual number, but you won't have the rationale for why that number is what it is. If I may, I'll save the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Unless there are any other questions.
Good morning, Your Honors. Beth Pacella from FERC. Let me start off by explaining how the executive compensation and compensation in general is determined. Let me first clarify that, as the Dickstein affidavit points out at JA 163, the merit and promotional increase budget is the budget for the entire employee base, including executives. It's not just for other employees. It's for everybody.
Let me just stop there with one factual question. Couldn't individual executives bump up 40%, whereas other people went down 10% to get to the average? In other words, like, isn't that just an overall number?
It is an overall budget.
It's not a cap on any individual executives.
No, it's not. That's right, Your Honor. But
so you could have some seriously unreasonable bumps going on.
Well, you wouldn't, because of that later check right at the end. I mean, there's a number of reasons you wouldn't have it. First of all, let me start at the beginning.
Directors.
Those five surveys, the national surveys, those are the surveys upon which compensation is determined. The Mercer report,
right, but there's
just
no
check.
Sure. There's no check on, say, the top three people getting huge bumps just because you've looked at an overall number.
No, your first question, absolutely you're right, that we know that merit increases at the ISO are only going to be 2.5% in total for the entire employee base, and promotional 0.5%. That's for the entire employee base. But the reason we know that an executive is not going to have an outlier increase different from other executives across the nation, as determined by these five surveys that the ISO looks at, is because those surveys provide information regarding what thousands of employers are planning on doing for the coming year for not just employees, but also for their executives. So all of that information is provided to the ISO. It's based on those initially looked at five surveys that the...
But they're not bound by those surveys. Again, I think they look at those surveys and then they say, okay, we'll do 2.5 and 0.5 for the merit and promotional. But that, again, doesn't prevent that.
But it is based on those surveys that they're made. I mean, that's just how the process works.
No, I know. But again, it wouldn't prevent, and again, I'm just trying to get the facts here, it wouldn't prevent individual executives from getting huge bumps.
But the way that the commission knows that's not going to happen is because there is that check by Mercer, as Your Honor was pointing out earlier, as the very last step in the process. After the
okay,
stakeholder
well, that's
process,
their argument. Their argument is they should know what Mercer's saying or what Mercer's relying on.
Well, they do know what Mercer's saying. They know that, look, the way this case started out is we know that the 2009 executive compensation was approved as just and reasonable by the commission, and the court affirmed the commission's determination there. We know that the surveys, which consider economic downturn, these 2009 surveys upon which the 2010 compensation is based, consider economic downturn because it was during the economic downturn. Even in this economic downturn, we're still intending, these thousands of employers are saying, to provide promotional and merit increases to our employees.
One more question is, part of your submission and the commission's submission is that there's a lot of process here. And
I think tremendous amount of process.
That's a very good argument. But does the process look at the individual's compensation? For example, does it look at what the CEO is getting and the CFO is getting and the senior vice presidents are getting? Or does it just look, does all that process just look at an overall number?
That depends what people want to look at. What's given to, what's shown to people
I'm
is
just trying to figure out if anyone ever has looked at the top executives' specific numbers.
Remember what the commission pointed out, which was one of the factors that was important to the commission, is that specific executive compensation is publicly available. In
right.
FERC Form 1, it's filed annually.
The IRS form.
And it's in the IRS Form 990. Everything about executive compensation is the IRS. And anyone, as the record reflects,
the argument was that it has to comply with IRS standards for executive pay of nonprofits, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It's not just that it has to be listed on the 990. I thought one of the arguments was this is a tax-exempt nonprofit, right?
That's exactly right.
So they're subject to IRS executive compensation standards.
Which is
correct?
Why this Mercer check at the last step is so important, because if Mercer says these specific executive compensation levels that you're planning on giving to the specific executives this year, they're not reasonable. The ISO will not give those executives that before.
But I think we're trying to focus on is what about the reverse? You know, two hypotheticals. Mercer says we've rechecked some of our methodology that we used in 2009, and we're going to make some adjustments for 2010.
There's no basis to believe that happened here, though, Your Honor.
We don't know.
Well,
could I just finish my
answer? Sure, I'm sorry.
That's one thing. The methodology changes, because part of your argument in the brief is the methodology, they knew what it was because the commission had approved it. Secondly, Mercer says because of, this is a hypothetical, because of the peculiarities of the economy, et cetera, and the nature of this particular industry and what FERC is trying to achieve, the average increases for the top executives is not appropriate for purposes of retaining and attracting them. So we want to give them much higher increases. And that's what we're recommending. So that's all in the Mercer report. That's my hypothetical. FERC says the ISO is happy, we're happy.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the second hypothetical. Could you repeat that?
Well, Judge Kavanaugh was exploring with you who looks at the individual amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it depends if anybody asks, you know, and they're available on these publicly filed forms with the IRS, et cetera. But the question is, you know that the executive is getting a dollar amount. Do you know what the rationale behind it is? And that's what I thought. You keep saying that's why the Mercer report is so important.
No.
Because only it's a check.
Only as a final check to the ISO to say, we're not going to get past the IRS. We can't give this level of compensation that we're proposing. But what we do know is that the ISO has picked the at or below the low end for its increases in total.
Here's what I don't understand, though, counsel. The Mercer, where does it say to Mercer that while you're an independent consultant advising the firm, you either have to say yes or no to what the ISO is proposing?
That the process works. All they're doing is they're doing the Mercer review is a comparability review. That's all it is this is reasonable compensation comparable to other similar entities. And we do know the process. That it's described exactly the same in this proceeding as it was in the prior proceeding, how Mercer will do its, how Mercer does its IRS review. The description is exactly the same. There's no basis to believe that the Mercer methodology is going to change. If the independent entity reviewing this were a different entity, maybe that concern would be a real concern. We would say, okay, it's a new independent reviewer. We don't know what their methodology is. We know what the Mercer methodology is. And
but
we know
what it was in 2009.
But there's no basis to believe that that changed, particularly because the description of their methodology is exactly the same here as it was in the prior case. There's just no basis to find that to be credible.
And the commission knows that because it's looked at the Mercer report?
The commission's reviewed. No, what the commission looked at was the record here. It looked at the Mercer report last year. It looked at and it found no credible claims regarding the Mercer methodology last year. And
right.
Now it has the same description for how the Mercer methodology is going to be done in this proceeding.
How do we know? How does FERC know that?
Well, it's described on page. The Mercer comparability review process is talked about in the initial order at J242, paragraph 26, in the rehearing order at 263, paragraph 9, at JA14, and also in which is part of the record.
Okay, I'm looking at the rehearing order, and it's a very general statement.
It doesn't tell me
what the methodology is.
In Ms. Dickstein's affidavit on JA166 to 167. It talks, it gives it's the same exact description she gave last year in her affidavit regarding the Mercer methodology.
Has she looked at the report?
She has seen the 2009 Mercer report, which is what they want.
Has she seen the 2000?
It didn't exist, Your Honor. That's as Judge Kavanaugh was pointing out. When, because of the nature of how revenue requirements are done, which the court affirmed last year, is that's perfectly appropriate. You don't have the future, we don't know what executive compensation was going to be in 2010 when the commission was reviewing this case, because it's not decided until after all the figures are actually in and proposed.
So paragraph 9 of the rehearing order, when it refers to the independent consulting firm, it's only referring to the 2009?
Yes,
report.
That's right, Your Honor. We don't know what the 2010 will say. It comes out in, I believe, March of each year. So it's probably just come out. And so executive compensation is not set until that occurs. I also wanted to talk about all of the other substantial evidence in this case, as Your Honors have already spoken about. This really is a circumstance where there's an overall reasonable process here and where there is tremendous substantial evidence supporting the commission's determination. The Mercer report being only the very last step in the process that Mercer will review this is just a simple check for the future. So for example, as we said on our brief and at pages 27 to 28, we listed all the various other things the commission relied on. For example, that the Merit and promotional increases have been set at or below the low end of the ranges, even after the numbers were updated at the end of the year. So not only did the commission make sure that the numbers were set at or below the low end of the ranges at the beginning, but it also made sure that when updates came out, that the ISO would relook at that like it did in 2009 and ensure that these rate, that the executive compensation would be at the very lowest point that it could be in order to attract and retain the very skilled people that we need to run the ISO. Additionally,
I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think Connecticut's concern is not the overall number. They're concerned about a few people getting exorbitant pay.
But there's
obviously your definition of exorbitant could be.
But there's nothing to base that on, Your Honor. They're not introducing themselves the IRS Form 990 or the FERC Form 1 and saying these were exorbitant rates last year and FERC fooled you.
That's a fair response. I'm just saying the overall number doesn't necessarily answer what I think is their precise complaint. Your process point does, the availability of the IRS forms
and this
does.
This is how revenue requirements are done, Your Honor. And remember, the independent board, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead and finish.
Remember, the independent board, this isn't their compensation. They have reviewed this. Stakeholders all reviewed this. The only entity who has problem with this is Connecticut.
Set aside the IRS review standards for a minute. Suppose just to pursue what both of my colleagues have been asking you here. Suppose that FERC thought their overall compensation budget was reasonable from a rate perspective. Okay.
Yes.
But the ISO decided, for whatever reason, that they wanted to pay their chief executive officer, their president, they wanted to pay him $10 million. And in order to do that, they were going to reduce everybody else by 5%. But so they'd still live within the budget that you approved as just and reasonable. Would FERC care?
Yes.
Why?
I think FERC would care.
I mean, the IRS might really care, but why would FERC care?
I think that FERC understands
the business judgment that they would make.
I think they would care because they're counting on that these are going to be reasonable numbers. I think FERC.
Well, it's their judgment. The ISO says, look, we really need this person.
Well,
we've got to pay $10 million to this person to get him. It's so important to the effective operation and our ability to serve our ratepayers that we're going to reduce everybody else 5%.
But that's my point, is FERC would care. It doesn't mean that it wouldn't look at those factors and say, well, it is really necessary. I mean, this is an important entity. Reliability is really important in running this grid, and having energy running in New England is very important. So if they truly could justify that, but yes, I think FERC would care. It doesn't mean it wouldn't.
I understand that, but it's conceivable that that would be okay if it was justified.
It is conceivable that would be okay. And then an independent entity whose expertise is looking at those numbers, and it would have to be comparable. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The ISO would never do that if that were not comparably being done elsewhere. So it's an unlikely scenario, but
that's why I called it a hypothetical.
Yeah. I don't know if you want me to, I mean, one of the things that Connecticut alleged was that the economic downturn wasn't considered, and I've talked about that in my brief. I just think it's important. It's replete throughout the record that this was very important, starting with the ISO first starting to have a flat budget. It tried to have a flat budget because it was so concerned with economics today. The ISO cut, you know, its budget is increasing by $10 million, but it's covering $4 million of that by cutting costs. So it's really only increasing its total budget by $6 million. I mean, and there's more and more, as I've talked about in my brief as well. The budgeting for, you know, increases is ultimately less expensive than high levels of turnover that would exist otherwise. ISO chose the low end of the ranges that I've mentioned a number of times. The updates, very important to the commission, that we're going to know, not only are we looking at surveys that exist at the beginning of the year, what people are planning on doing, but now we're making sure that the end of year surveys confirm that. And as the commission pointed out in, I believe, the last paragraph of its rehearing order, it said these updates confirm that it's just that these proposed increases are just and reasonable. And that's all I have, unless the court has any further questions. Thank you.
Thank Counsel for petitioner.
Thank you. I have quite a few things I'd like to address here, but I think the first was, Judge Kavanaugh, you had mentioned that Connecticut was a concern that a few of these people were getting exorbitant salaries. I would like to clarify for the record that this is a process argument for us. We've met with the ISO's executives. They come with meet us often. For all I know, they're worth every penny of what they're earning. Well, I wanted to make clear that we're not saying that these people are abusing a process in some manner and making out.
It seems an essential element of your theory must be that some of these people are making too much.
Our theory is that we're not allowed to see how the decision-making process...
You know the numbers.
We can get them subsequently when they're filed.
Do you think they're making too much? You know the numbers. Are they making too much?
I don't have the ability to make that judgment because they're not filing the material that justifies their salary. If they were able to file the Mercer report, we would have the documents.
You have survey data, and you just have common sense, which would tell you, okay, this person's making $750,000, that seems crazy, or this person's making $2.3 million, that's too much.
The survey data is not part of the record.
As we said last year, it's more art than science here. You just have a common sense reaction to certain positions. Whoa, that's out of whack. And then you look at survey data, which is what available.
The survey data is not a part of the record. So, what I put this is, it's more faith than art. It's they're telling you that they've looked at survey data, and they're telling you that they've looked at the Mercer report.
There's a lot of, art. There's a lot of common sense that's going on here too with the numbers. And I understand your process point, but boy, this thing seems processed to the nth degree with...
And I would like to... That is actually one of our, we think, our strongest points. We think there is no process, and the process is all form without content and appearance without substance.
These people are all going through the motions? The independent board, are they just asleep?
ISO's board approves its budget requests is just a preliminary step towards that budget appearing at the commission. It doesn't add anything to the argument to say that ISO supports its own proposed executive compensation.
Was the board independent? Of the people who actually proposed the figures?
Well, we would like to have the opportunity to...
Maybe not. You can say, no, they're not.
The next iteration is the NEPOOL stakeholders, and we think that is not... It doesn't add anything to the discussion to say the NEPOOL stakeholders supported it. Most of the stakeholders are transmission, generation. Only some of us are load. We're the ones that are going to be paying those rates. The rest of them are indifferent to whatever rates ISO charges. And in fairness, once NEPOOL stakeholders go, it's the FERC and not the NEPOOL stakeholders that get to set rates. We want to have FERC make a reasonableness determination and not the NEPOOL stakeholders. There was some discussion earlier about the IRS having filing requirements. The standard of the IRS filing requirements is quite different from just and reasonable rates. The burden is on the IRS to determine whether or not the rates are the proposals are unreasonable. There's a rebuttable presumption that the rates are reasonable once they get to the IRS, and the ISO discusses that at Joint Appendix 219.
Don't you think FERC, when they're assessing reasonableness, is looking at process and substance, the numbers and the process? And so it all, you've said we have a process-based argument, but I think
yes,
FERC's looking at the overall picture here, and the picture includes numbers, specific numbers. It includes increases for overall. It includes who's approved it. And so FERC's just saying, is this reasonable? And we're then determining whether FERC was reasonable. There's almost a double level of deference going on here, which is a tough hill for you.
Well, I think none of the documentation that the FERC is actually providing is, as we said, the stakeholder process, the board of directors. None of these are hard data, and we've never been in a rate proceeding before where a utility that actually had something that they say justifies their rate request and supports a reasonableness conclusion but doesn't provide it. I mean, they've admitted they provided it. They admitted it's important to their resolution, to their internal discussions. The FERC admits that it's important for it to make its own internal discussion. It's clearly relevant. Ratepayers have paid for that document. That comes directly out of rates. That's part of their rate case. And yet when we ask for it, to look at it, It's not made available to us. And we think that is the only substantive rationale and justification for them setting the rates at the levels that they do.
Anything further?
No. No. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.